PE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crown queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to The Wealth Show. I'm Natalia Vasnier and today I'm joined by Jonathan Griffiths, Head of Investment at EBI Portfolios. EBI recently featured in the Citywire's top performing MPS providers list and stood out as the only provider with a focus on sustainability. Jonathan is here with me today to discuss more about EBI's investment philosophy and the recent publication of its white paper on tolerance-based rebalancing. Jonathan, thank you for joining me today.
Great to be here. Thanks, Natalia.
I just wanted to kick off quickly with the recent news about the launch of EBI's fund of fund range with Amundi. And I wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit more about this and a little bit of a background about EBI as well.
Yeah, sure thing. Yeah, just to give you a bit on EBI first then. So if you're not familiar with us, we're an MPS provider focused on delivering evidence-based and low-cost portfolios combined with award-winning technology for our financial advisor clients. And that technology piece has always been important for us. Our founder was a financial advisor himself, and we've built EBI to address the pain points that financial advisors encounter. So alongside our portfolios, we have a range of tech and tools that are, you know, we provide free of charge to our members, including cash flow modeling and tolerance-based rebalancing, for example. I would just note as well that our AUM has recently just hit 5 billion. So we're one of the fastest growing providers in the industry. That's an increase of about £1 billion over the past 5 months. So it's been a great period for us. Great. Thanks. Yeah. So, the fund of funds launch. So I'm excited to share that EBI will shortly be launching our new global factor fund range, which is a fund of funds solution. So this marks EBI entering the fund of funds market, offering a fund of funds alongside our existing MPS solutions. And the global factor funds are going to bring a unique offering to the market as their factor tilted and ESG screened approach will be unique in the fund of funds space. So there's no other providers out there doing both of these things, that is a sustainable and factor driven approach. Now, I imagine listeners, really are very aware of CGT allowances and some of the pain and pressure points we've had there in recent years. And so, yeah, we've launched this off the back of client demand, particularly from GIA and clients, with our traditional MPS structure, you know, causing some issues in terms of fund swaps or portfolio rebalances triggering CGT events, given the lack of tax protection, of course, compared with a pension or ISA. Now, the new fund of funds will see fund swaps and portfolio rebalances occurring within the fund, and so not triggering a CGT event at that point in time. So we've really launched it to address that market need while also bringing our evidence-based approach to the fund of funds space.
Great. No, thank you. Thank you for giving the background on that. That's really interesting and looking forward to it coming out. I think my next question is more about EBI. So EBI means evidence-based investing, as you mentioned earlier. I think it would be interesting for listeners to know, what do you mean by this? And what does this look like in the investment process?
Sure. Yeah. So evidence-based investing, that's what our name stands for. I define it as an investment approach that uses decades of academic research to determine what works best in terms of delivering long-term investment outcomes. So you can look at the market and performance of securities within it, and you can group securities together based on different shared characteristics and observe how some of those groups might outperform the market while others may underperform, for example. And that's the essence of an evidence-based approach, using long-term data to model best practices in terms of long-term investment outcomes. Now, this points to a buy and hold approach using low-cost funds, often index funds, as part of a strategic asset allocation rather than seeking to outperform the market through shorter-term tactical timing, say, or security selection. And so in terms of the investment process, you know, when we then bring that kind of philosophy in-house, so we deploy evidence-based investing through primarily our factor-tilted investment strategies, which involve tilting portfolios towards those specific factors that history has shown have provided a risk-adjusted return premium compared to the market over the long run. So yeah, those shared characteristics I mentioned a moment ago. And what we do see in the data is these certain factors rise up as delivering a return premium over time, with the most evident ones being quality, momentum, value, minvol, size. I won't go into detail of all of those now, but this is the approach we adopt in our factor portfolios, tilting towards these factors while still significantly being exposed to market beta. And I would note that we're taking more of a buy and hold approach to the factors, equally weighting to them rather than actively trading in and out of them. And so we're less concerned about short-term performance versus the market and more focused on that long-term story.
Okay. And I think that feeds well into my next question, because I think over the past decade, there's been quite a lot of debate around passive versus active management. And I was kind of like looking a bit about back at your career, and I've noticed that you worked also at firms with a more active tilt. And now you're at EBI. I would like to kind of know a bit where do you see yourself in the middle of that debate, and where does EBI places itself?
Yeah, it's a great question. And yeah, I've definitely had exposure to different parts of the industry, including working at a number of active managers, as you mentioned. So I would say, so EBI, we fall more naturally towards the passive side. You know, we believe that it is possible, but think it is incredibly difficult to outperform the market consistently and after fees have been taken into account. And that's both the higher management fees that come with active management, as well as trading costs entering and exiting positions. But we do think it's possible, and you know, you asked for my personal opinion. I have seen some great investors over the years who have really delivered, you know, compounding year on year outperformance. So I think it's possible, but very tricky, I guess, is what I would say. On the flip side, you know, pure passive, we and I lean more that way, but we do acknowledge that there are issues with that kind of approach as well. A hot topic, of course, at the moment is AI and tech concentration risk in market indices and therefore mainstream passive portfolios. And it really is a real risk, right? You know, just looking at the latest numbers, end of September, the Magnificent Seven megacap tech stocks that we all know so much about at this point in time, you know, accounting for almost 25% of the MSCI World Index of developed market stocks, and then 22% of the MSCI ACWI Index, which includes obviously emerging market alongside developed market. I think most people would agree it's quite an extreme situation and does introduce risk into portfolios. And so we believe a third option in between passive and active is the best route forward, which is a factor-tilted strategy, as I mentioned, tilting towards factors that are on a long-term structural basis, but not seeking to profit through short-term tactical trading. And so we think that's a sweet spot because you get to smooth some of the edges of passive. So, for example, our flagship Earth Suite equity element has an 11% exposure to the Mag 7, which is a lot more reasonable from our view. And you also get to seek to profit from investment premium over the long run, but without those higher fees and risks that you see in traditional active. What I would say, though, is we don't force that view upon clients. We do offer pure market strategies alongside our factor strategies for those who prefer the simplicity of a pure market approach as well.
Okay, I see. And then kind of following up on the Magnificent Seven that you were mentioning, given, because you were mentioning kind of the factor tilted, so more small cap value, given the domination of the US tech and Magnificent Seven, as you were mentioning, in the market, how does that impact you in terms of the investment process, given the focus on kind of more small cap value options?
Yeah, so in terms of the investment process, so we really focus on setting long-term strategic asset allocations, you know, analyzing historic returns to set the optimal combination of different factors in a portfolio over the long run, right? Now, that has naturally led to lower exposure to US tech stocks, Mag 7, as mentioned. But we're not actively seeking to underweight individual tech names, but more those underweights are a result of the long-term factor-driven investment process. And so what we see, we have a market-driven strategy as well, or a number of market-driven strategies. We have our factor-tilted strategies, and they kind of flip in and out of out and underperformance in a recent time period, so past 12 months or so, maybe see that slightly lower performance on the factor strategies, but then the risk that you've brought in terms of reducing the Mag 7 weighting from 20-25% down to more like 10 or 11% is substantial. And so it's that kind of risk reward trade off, as always, in investing, and getting that balance right. But for us, it's that long term focus that we really focus on.
Okay. And then I had just a quick question about the regulator. Earlier this year, it was mentioned that the FCA was looking to do an MPS review, given the high rise of kind of providers coming into the space. What would you like to see in the review? What do you expect to see in the review by the regulator?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think it has a chance to shine a really useful light on the industry, which has, of course, grown very fast over recent years, and help share ideas in terms of best practice, industry standards. Now, there's discussions about the potential for the review to outline more formalized guidance in terms of fact sheets and other reporting, for example. I think that could be a beneficial thing. I also think some further communication from the FCA on obviously consumer duty or ongoing communication there, but how that's expected to be continued to be implemented by the MPS industry would be helpful, as we're all working very hard to make sure we're fully meeting the regulation, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And so assurance that we're all on the right path is always appreciated. But overall, I'm just looking forward to seeing the results of their research findings, getting an update on how they're viewing the industry and the regulatory landscape for it, and what can we expect over the next 5 or 10 years.
That makes sense. And has it been a concern of you, the growing amount of providers entering the space?
Not necessarily a concern. I mean, there is a lot of entrants in recent years. It has, of course, been, you know, the hot part of the industry. You know, we like to see high standards for sure. And it's been encouraging to see quite a few, you know, lower cost providers entering the space, really focused on, you know, lower cost, more pure market solutions. So not necessarily a concern, but it is obviously a natural point for the FCA to come in and take a deeper look at the industry.
Okay. And now I just wanted to shift towards more of the second part of the podcast, focused on the white paper that EBI put out a few weeks ago on tolerance-based rebalancing. Obviously, rebalancing is such a key part of the process for MPS providers. Some do it quarterly, some do it more ad hoc, some take a more tolerance-based approach. I think it would be useful for our listeners if you could maybe tell us a bit the origins behind the white paper and kind of a brief definition of what tolerance-based rebalancing is.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. For those listeners who aren't familiar with EBI, we are pioneers in the field of tolerance-based rebalancing. So yeah, what is tolerance-based rebalancing? Well, put simply, it's an approach to portfolio rebalancing that is driven by the underlying portfolio and the movement of assets within it, rather than being driven by the simple passage of time, as we see in a traditional quarterly or annual-based approach. And to give a basic example, let's say you have two asset classes in a portfolio, global equities and global bonds. Now, we all know you'll need to rebalance at some point, else the risky equities will most likely over time deliver higher returns than the bonds and gradually account for a larger and larger proportion of the portfolio. And so you'll obviously end up with the portfolio weights that aren't appropriate for the underlying investor's risk profile. Now, a calendar-based approach addresses this for sure, you know, rebalancing back to target once a year or once a quarter, say. However, we believe a superior approach is to actually set thresholds at the underlying portfolio or asset level, choosing in advance at which point you automatically would rebalance a portfolio back to target weights. So in that basic example I gave a moment ago, you know, if one of the two asset groups in the portfolio drifts to, say, 25% above the target or 20% below the target, for example, then at that point, you could undertake a rebalance and have that predetermined in time and have that modeled and have a reason for those thresholds being set in place. And so by linking rebalancing to the actual portfolio rather than the arbitrary passage of time, we believe there is actually a return premium that you can pick up from this, right? And then you've seen that white paper and asked about this. So, you know, tolerance-based rebalancing, it's an approach we've used for over a decade in our portfolios, and we really have seen some strong results compared to if we've been using a calendar-based approach. But we wanted to formally put it to the test. And so we carried out a long-term research project on this topic, right? And we should note, of course, we try to be as objective as we can. We took, in this project, but we of course do operate a TBR, a tolerance spacing balancing approach. And so this is our analysis, but we did it as independent as we could be. And I can mention some of the ways in which we managed that, if that's useful. But effectively what we did, the research team built a range of models in the Python programming language, analyzing about 30 years of data from Morningstar Direct and reviewing portfolio returns over time using different scenarios of annual, quarterly or tolerance space rebalancing. And we modeled a few different types of tolerance space rebalancing, right? So we based our analysis on EBI's flagship Earth portfolio suite. It got the factors in, as I've mentioned. And we looked at portfolios ranging from a 10% equity and 90% bond portfolio up to 100% equity portfolio with increments of 10% equity in between. So that's 10 portfolios in total. And the results were really interesting because we found that when averaged across all 10 risk levels, there was a net rebalancing premium for the tolerance-based approach of 0.13% per annum compared to the annual rebalancing approach and 0.30% per annum compared to the quarterly rebalancing approach. So, that's not insignificant. That's annualized over the 30 years. And that's across all the risk levels that I mentioned. When we actually look at the highest single best premium, we found that for the annual comparison, that was for the Earth, the 60% equity level, and that was 0.28%, again, the annual one. And then on the quarterly one, that was 0.45%. Again, that was for Earth 60. So we believe there's some real premiums that can be picked up here, and we believe the tolerance based balancing approach is a superior approach, but is one that is still somewhat niche in the industry.
Thank you so much for explaining that. I think those results are really interesting, and kind of what I gathered as well from the finding was that the back to target tolerance based rebalancing model was the one that was the most successful compared to the waterfall TBR method. And if I understand correctly, the waterfall method, that's what EBI uses currently. Given the findings, how come EBI uses the waterfall approach rather than the back to target one?
Yes, that's a great question. I can tell you read the paper. That's really observant of you. I won't go into the weeds too much, but yeah, just to note, so there are two main ways we modeled the tolerance based rebalancing approach. So one, back to target, and that's kind of the normal one, let's say, which assumes that when a rebalance triggers, portfolio weights are taken all the way back to the target weights, right? And then the second was the waterfall approach, which assumes that when a rebalance is triggered, the portfolio weights are taken 75% of the way back to targets, but not all the way back. And we did this because our previous research a decade or so ago indicated that there was a premium in actually adopting that waterfall approach, the second one, and only taking the portfolio weights 75% of the way back to target, in part due to trading costs and lower overall trading costs because less portfolio adjustment would be needed. And so that was what we found before. And indeed, you're correct, that was what our approach was based on and built around. However, the results of our recent study, as you've mentioned, that actually indicated that premium had disappeared and that the 100% back to target approach was superior. And in part, this was due to trading costs falling over the past decade or so. And so trading costs having a small impact on the results overall. So you rightly mentioned we were using the waterfall method. So what we did following the results of this study, and the conclusions, we did a lot more testing, as you'd imagined. And then we actually adopted the fully back to target method in our mainstream approach. So, bringing in the results of our study into our live algorithm. And as such, as of today, our live algorithm is based on 100% back to target approach now. And that's it in force.
Okay. Yeah. That was going to be my follow up question, is if you actually moved to the back to target following the findings.
Exactly. As you know, so you obviously read the paper, but that's something that we've really brought in over the past month or two. So that's now fully in force across all our portfolios.
Okay, that's really interesting. And then when you were describing kind of the key findings, I think the main points that you were mentioning is that the TBR approach yields high annualized returns across multiple portfolios and leads to more efficient risk management. If so, why do you think so many model portfolios providers still follow a quarterly or periodic rebalancing system?
Yeah, so it's another good question. You know, this approach isn't new. The technology isn't new. So yeah, we've been running it for a decade, as mentioned. I think, as with all things in, you know, the industry and life more generally, you know, there's a lot of inertia in systems, you know, tried and tested ways of doing things, and so it can take quite a while for new and better approaches to be adopted. You know, we think the data is pretty clear for a tolerance-based approach being superior, but moving to such an approach, of course, involves resource costs into developing it or licensing it, and then the project to switch to the new approach. And I think it's not typically an area that end clients ask that much about. You know, there isn't necessarily that much push from end clients. But I would put forward that if they could see the returns that were potentially being left on the table, you know, particularly in this age of cost compression, cost reduction across the board, then there would be more of a demand for this approach. So yeah, we'll continue to fly the flag and deliver this for our clients. But we're also really willing to share the approach with any other interested parties who may be looking into implementing it. So, you know, if that is the case, then please get in touch with us and we'd happily run you through our process.
Great, great. I mean, I think my follow-up question was that, so what was the kind of reaction from the industry following the release of the white paper? Did some firms get back to you saying, like, oh, this sounds like an interesting strategy, I would like to kind of look more into it? Or what was kind of the reaction following that?
Yeah, so yeah, definitely good reaction from clients in the wider industry. On the client side, obviously a lot of our clients were already kind of fully signed up for and aligned with the tolerance-based approach. But great to be able to share results with them formally and the research paper with them. And I would note as well, we put some good information together around the study and the results. So we've got a formal white paper and various articles and blogs summarizing it. So that really has started some great engagement, started a conversation for sure. And there is part of the industry that is definitely focused on quarterly or annual rebalancing and we'll defend that. But we're just open to the debate. Others have definitely shown some interest and we've shared our view with them. And yeah, I would note that any listeners who want more information, they can just go on our website, ebi.co.uk, and you can download the white paper there and lots of the supporting information as well.
Great. I think that's a great note to end it on. Jonathan, it was great to have you on.
Thanks, Natalia. I really appreciate your time.
You've been listening to The Well Show. For any questions, please feel free to email us at wmnews@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening and we'll see you next week.
Today is VE Day. The war is
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.